Today we are doing another episode of the Ask the Coaches podcast. So before we dive into answering the questions that you guys submitted on social media, or actually one of these questions came to us from our inbox, we will preview what the questions are. So you can skip ahead if you want to pay attention to one specific question or just listen to the whole thing throughout. So the first question is very specific, but essentially it's asking, hey, VDOT calculator says that I can run a marathon time that's actually 20 minutes faster than I've ever ran in the marathon. And they gave a little bit more details as to what the times were, but they also noted that in training, they don't really have a lot of aerobic fatigue, so they don't really get out of breath. It's more like their legs just give out, or they feel like their legs are really heavy. So we're going to do a deep dive on this question because it's actually incredibly common for runners to have a 5K time, plug that into the VDOT calculator online, and then it says, hey, you should be capable of this super amazing marathon time. And a lot of the times, the initial reaction, if you've never used a VDOT calculator and you do this, you almost laugh at what the marathon time says if you're not familiar with these tools, because it does give you a pretty aggressive marathon time based on the calculation that it uses. So we're going to talk about the little factors that kind of go into that, and also just as an important reminder that it does sometimes take time to build up to that marathon distance. It's a lot harder to run a marathon time to your potential than say like a 1 mile or a 5K time to your potential, just because the aerobic base can take so much longer to build. I mean, think of how easy it is to build up from not running at all to 3 miles as a run. I mean, that's something that most people can do within a few weeks, maybe a few months. But when it comes to going from like a 3 mile run to a 26.2 mile run, that usually takes people a very long time to build up to that. And so we'll talk a little bit more in detail of that question. The second question that came in was tips for running during pregnancy. I feel like we've gotten a variation of this question in the past, and we also have an entire podcast episode on this question back from, I believe, February of 2021. So if you scroll back quite a ways, you can see a whole episode on this. We also plan on recording and releasing a new podcast specifically on running during pregnancy and postpartum, and I will be talking to Coach Mary on that podcast. And so she has two kids, I have two kids as well, and so we'll just be talking about our personal experiences as well as maybe anyone that we've coached through pregnancy and postpartum. Obviously really important to check with your doctor because there are a lot of like complications and things that can arise, and everyone's journey is so different, but we can give a few tips on this episode. Question number three, can you train consecutive cycles for a 5K, or do you need to periodize? So I think what this question is getting at is, do you need to structure a 5K training plan? Let's say you have a 5K that's in 12 weeks from now. Do you need to periodize that and have like one 5K at the very end, or can you do a couple 5Ks within that cycle? So we'll talk about what the optimal way of training for a 5K race is in our opinion and how you can frame that up. Question number four. So we got a few of these mom questions coming in. Question number four was breastfeeding and race day logistics. So how does that work if you're a nursing mom, you're lactating and you need to run a race? Sometimes, as many of you know, when you go to a race, you might arrive there, like take for example the Boston Marathon, which is coming up here pretty soon. I think for that race, I got on the bus, I can't even remember, but maybe like 7 a.m. and you don't really start the race until, it really depends on what wave you're in, but if you're in some of those later waves, maybe you're starting at like 11. So there's 4 hours from when you board that bus to when you actually start the race in some cases, and that's a really long time. So if you're a nursing mom or if you're breastfeeding, lactating, you are probably going to be needing to pump, nurse, whatever that may be, every, depending on like where you're at in that journey, between every like 2 to 6 hours, depending on the age of your child and where you're at. And so for big races like the Boston Marathon, that does really come into play. And I know in recent years, I've seen that Boston and other big marathons, they do have a like a mother's tent where you can go in. They have like places where you can drop your pump and all of those things, which is really nice because back in 2018, when I ran the Boston Marathon, I don't think that that was available. I think I just used like a manual pump in a porta potty and then just ran the race after that. It kind of tossed everything. So there are multiple ways that you can go about doing it. And I think it's going to vary based on where your race is. If it's something that's really local and your kid can actually come to the race, might be a little bit easier than, say, you're traveling across the country to do one of these major races where there's a lot of downtime. So we'll talk about different logistics there. Question number five was, should I use the MAC, which I think they meant MAF, the MAF, heart rate, or should I use my lactic threshold heart rate to train in zone two? So I'm going to probably defer to Jason for this one. The MAF heart rate method, it's pretty common used in endurance athletes, and it's basically they have you like fill out a bunch of questions like your age, what's your max heart rate, blah, blah, blah. Have you been injured in the last couple of years? And it'll come up with exactly what your heart rate should be on like 80% of your runs, right? Like your easy pace heart rate. I find that that's like pretty in line, but the MAF heart rate is very different than if we're training based on like zone 1, 2, 3, 4, right? MAF heart rate is basically giving you, okay, train at exactly, let's say it's 150 beats per minute. When you're doing different zones, like zone 1, 2, 3, you have a little bit more of a range. And I find at least my MAF heart rate is not actually in zone 2 if I'm calculating that way. And so there's just different ways that you can train. I also think it's really challenging to train based on heart rate just because you want to make sure you're getting an accurate assessment. A lot of the watches that are out there with the wrist heart rate monitor, the technology is getting better. I think I have a more updated Garmin right now, and I can tell you that this wrist heart rate monitor is more accurate than my previous model that was from like 2017, but I still am weary about that, and I think the chest strap is going to give you the best accuracy. Another thing that you should think of is that your heart rate does vary a little bit from, like if you're a woman, what part of your menstrual cycle you're in is going to vary what your heart rate is, if you have caffeine or not before the run. So there are things that can actually like spike your heart rate, and so that's why it can be challenging to train based on heart rate alone in some cases. So we'll go a little bit more into that. So diving into question number one, VDOT says that I can run a faster marathon by about 20 minutes. My lungs do not give out, but my legs do. Here's some background of this individual. I run 50 miles a week. I do 2 speed days, 1 long run, 3 easy days. So that is 6 days per week, 50 miles a week. Their fastest marathon was 4 hours. Current projection based on their half marathon time says they should run about a 3:40 marathon. They find that it's hard to breathe for an hour following an interval workout. My muscles are rarely sore. Oh, so it was the opposite. So they're having a hard time breathing during their interval workouts and their muscles are rarely sore. So this is actually pretty straightforward answer, I think. I mean, obviously I'd like to ask a little bit more follow-up questions, but for this, it's like you're specifically saying you're doing 2 speed days a week, and you're out of breath. So you shouldn't be out of breath if you're doing speed days and you're training for an aerobic event. So the marathon is 99% aerobic, 1% anaerobic. So in order to really get the most out of your fitness, you want to be training that aerobic system. You want to be lowering your threshold heart rate or threshold pace. So a lot of the running that you're going to be doing is going to be with oxygen. And so when you're training those zones, like even a threshold workout, you're still doing that with oxygen. So it's still an aerobic workout, aerobic threshold. You do not want to be in a place where you're finding it hard to breathe for an hour following an interval workout. Maybe at the last rep, you get a little bit breathless, but you want to, if you're training for a marathon, you're trying to lower your threshold. You really just want to be kind of at a place where when you're done with the rep, you can be back to normal breathing or like normal easy pace running breathing within 30 seconds. And that's while you're jogging. So you don't want to be hands in, like, you don't want to be bending over with your hands on your knees, breathless. What you're doing if you are doing a lot of intervals and you're breathless after, hands on your knees, can't breathe, like I can't breathe. That's called anaerobic. So you're working your anaerobic system. So unfortunately, when you're working your anaerobic system, you're not really working the same system that's going to make you into a fast marathoner. And so that's why it's really important to be doing the correct workouts for marathon training. What I would do is throw out all speed days. We don't need to be doing speed days. You clearly have the speed. I would now mark these as threshold days, endurance days. So your workouts, I wouldn't have you going faster than threshold pace. So what is your threshold pace? We could go to VDOT. I don't have it up right now.
750 probably, according to...
If they're 340 marathon.
Yeah, 750 to 755.
A lot, yeah. I would have a lot of your pace work being intervals right in that range. And the funny thing is if you do some of these workouts right in that like threshold range around 750, 745, you're probably going to find that it's not that challenging. Like you're going to say, this is just really doing something. I don't really believe it, but I'm going to change the way that you do your workout. So right now, maybe you're doing shorter reps. You're probably going like all out for 2 minutes, 1 minute, 4 minutes. I don't know. But these would be like, you'd build up to be able to do 4 or 5 by 1 mile at this like 745, 750 pace. And then the rest in between is going to be so minimal. So maybe we're only resting for 60 seconds. So where right now, maybe you have to catch your breath for like 3-4 minutes in between, or it's just you're really winded. We would want the goal that after, let's say you do 1 mile at 745 pace, I would want you to be able to continue jogging through that and get your breathing under control, feel like you're ready to go, do another one, boom, and just repeat, repeat, repeat. You want your body to get familiar with running at that 745 pace. What does that feel like? Building up to doing up to probably like 6 miles of work at that pace overall within a run. So it could be something like 3x2 mile, 6x1 mile, but you might start small, right? So the first workout you do could be something as simple as 2x1.5 mile at the 745 pace and a very short 2 to 3 minute jog in between. And you might finish that and go, I'm not out of breath. And like you referenced before, your legs aren't super fatigued. But we're going to build on that over time. So you want to do a progressive overload. You want to do workouts like that twice a week. So the other workout you could be doing. So if you're running 50 miles a week, really, like how much mileage could you be doing? 20% of 50. You could be doing 10 miles of work per week. So another workout you could do maybe on the weekend is you could also do some marathon pace or steady state work. So instead of running at 745 pace, you could be running closer to that marathon pace. So around that 820, 810 pace, slightly faster than marathon pace, because that helps your body learn to run at a quicker pace over a longer period of time. So maybe you do something like 2-3 mile warm up, 5 miles at that marathon pace, and then a 2-3 mile cool down, and that's within a long run. Because your mileage is there and you're running 50 miles a week, I would say maybe you are ready for a little bit more of advanced workouts, because you can do up to, I think I said 12 miles of faster workout stuff. So I would just shift how you're doing your workouts. I would ax the speed. You can keep in strides. So on some of your easy run days, you can do like 4 to 6 by 20 seconds fast with full recovery in between. That can help with the leg turnover. It can keep that like raw speed kind of in there. But really when it comes to your workout days, those 12 miles per week that you can do at a faster pace, we really want the bread and butter to be more at your threshold pace. And over time, that's going to help you run faster at the marathon and at longer distance races, because you're building the correct system, you're lowering your threshold, you're getting fitter.
Yeah, you know, you said a lot of good things here, and without knowing a lot of details on this person's background, like what specific workouts they're doing and that sort of thing, it's really hard to give like concrete advice. But everything you said, I agree with. And the two speed workout days, you know, my first thought was, yeah, maybe they're running them too fast. And so if you're unable to breathe, you know, you can't catch your breath for an hour after, maybe you're doing them in like the repetition zones, or you're just running them too fast. That could be common. And so, like you said, focusing on a lot more threshold and endurance work. And then, you know, when we think about our race results, right, the marathon distance is difficult. I'd be curious to know how many marathons this person has done, you know, with a 4-hour PR, and then also how many halves they've done. You know, their halftime must be around 145 if that indicates that they can run a 340 or even faster. But so, you know, you mentioned when you kicked off this podcast, I think something about like it takes time to build that aerobic base for these longer distances. So, you know, you think about, you know, you're doing mile repeats at threshold, and then eventually you're doing like, you know, 2 mile repeats at your threshold. And so it just like takes time to add in and build that endurance, but also get the racing experience, right? Like, you know, with the marathon itself, it can be difficult. And I know this person mentioned it was a fasted marathon at 4 hours. So maybe trying to, you know, add in some fueling strategies to see if that can help, you know, boost your energy. You know, in the marathon for myself, it was always the same thing. My lungs were totally fine. It was always my legs, right? And feeling that feeling of lethargy as the race went on. And so how do you get stronger? It's by the workouts and just by doing the longer runs and making sure your recovery is on point too, because you can't be fried from all of your quality speed sessions and still get a quality long run in and that sort of thing. So
totally. Yeah. And I think doing a lot of those speed workouts, they can really be fun. And I personally love that burn of like going all out, right? Like it's just, you feel so productive, but really at the end of the day, if your goal is fast marathon, you really don't want to be operating in that vicinity at all. I know before I ran my sub 3-hour marathon, every single workout I did leading up to that, I didn't touch anything that was anaerobic. You just really have to be pretty diligent about like sticking to those threshold workouts, and it can honestly kind of get a little boring, but marathon training, that's just kind of how it goes. If you make those tweaks, you will see a big breakthrough, but just stay consistent with it over the course of 12 to 16 weeks, and you will be amazed at how much faster you can run for longer distance races. And of course, going hand in hand with that, you have to be doing the long runs, adding in maybe some marathon pace work into your long runs. There's a lot of really good workouts. We have some on our Instagram. If you are interested in like specific workouts for you, I'd give you a few examples. If you just like message the inbox again, maybe we can get chatting on that. And if anyone listening is curious, there's definitely a few workouts I could throw at anyone in any of these situations. I love talking about marathon workouts. It's just super exciting. Mm-hmm. So question number two, diving into tips for running during pregnancy. I know we have a whole podcast episode on this. If you go back to February of 2021, there's a really good episode where I talk with one of our coaches, Coach Bree, who was recovering from a C-section at the time. And we just kind of talked about what that looked like running through her pregnancy, running through my pregnancies, and everything that kind of encompasses that. And I think the biggest advice that I will give is that it's really important in pregnancy, like even when we're talking about running or anything, to not compare yourself to others, because there are just a variety of ways that people experience pregnancy, right? So even if we're not talking about from a running perspective, like some people start showing at 12 weeks, other people don't show at all until like their 32 weeks. And so you could drive yourself crazy trying to play this comparison game of like, why are they able to run so much during pregnancy? Or why was I throwing up during the whole first trimester where this other person didn't have any symptoms? And so everyone's going to be experiencing pregnancy differently. And even within the same person, like I've had 2 kids, 1 boy, 1 girl, and my pregnancy experiences were vastly different with each of them. Like one of them, I was a lot more sick and I gained weight more rapidly. The other one was pretty non-symptomatic during the first trimester. And so you can even compare yourself to, oh, like in the past I did this, but every pregnancy is going to be different. And so that's why it's important to remember that you can't necessarily look at what someone else is doing when they're pregnant running and try to like project that onto what you should be doing, right? So it's really important to listen to your body, going based off what maybe were you doing before pregnancy, and then you want to make adjustments from there, right? So if you're having a terrible first trimester and you just are throwing up, nauseous, whatever, it's completely normal for some people to not run at all during the first trimester. And then there's people on also the opposite end of the spectrum where maybe they're running the same as what they were pre-pregnancy. And anywhere in between. So what I found helpful is just to adjust, kind of go week by week, day by day, based on how you're feeling, and just staying in tune with your body, keeping things easy. trying to stay a little bit consistent with just movement, right? So some days when I really wasn't feeling it, I would just say, okay, like, let's just go out for a walk and see kind of how you feel. Because sometimes it was just getting out the door was the hardest part of things. And there are a lot of days where you will have to adjust. And I think that is important to not compare. I think one of the things that I did was always like Google, like, running through pregnancy. And I would read other people's blogs and be like, how is this person running so much during pregnancy? So again, everyone's going to be different. Try not to compare yourself to others and just kind of go off of what feels good to you. Obviously, talking to your doctor, making sure you're clear to exercise, because I know there are some conditions within pregnancy where they don't want you to be exercising as much or not doing high impact stuff for a little bit of time here and there. But other than that, if you're in the clear and you're good to go, just kind of continuing to listen to your body and do all those things. Question number three, can you train consecutive cycles for a 5K or do you need to periodize? So this is a really good question. We actually have a free downloadable plan. I think it's, Unleash the Speed. Yeah, it's a speed plan. And it is like a 5K speed plan. And if you open that up and you download that on our website, you can find it. So it's at runforprs.com, drop down free plans, drop down Unleash the Speed. If you fill out the form, you can get that free plan. What you will notice on that free plan is that we are asking these people to go and like do either a 5K, 2 mile, or 1 mile race or time trial every 2 to 3 weeks. And the reason that we're doing that is because we find that with the 5K, you actually do get some benefits from racing more frequently. And I think that's really foreign to people who have that marathon or half marathon background, because for the marathon, we're always like, only do one or two a year, don't do too many. But with a 5K, it's like your recovery time from a 5K, you'll be recovered in a couple days and ready to go knock out another one. So I will defer to you, Jason, to talk a little bit about your background coaching the 5K and your experience with, you know, college and high school athletes.
Yeah, I definitely like this question a lot. And so, you know, at first when we think about a whole 5K training cycle, I mean, that could look like 8 weeks. It could look like 4 months, right? Kind of in between that range. You know, I use 4 months as a good number because most high school seasons are going to be 3 to 4 months. So, you know, high school age is perfect and college age because they're training for 5K. College kids, it's about 8K. But, you know, that's a typical season. And yes, it's possible to do consecutive cycles. So if you do the cycle, you know, you periodize it for the 4 months or whatever, 3 months, take a little break. You could jump into another one. Yes, you can. And as an adult, you know, you might not want to do that if you have other distance goals that you want to focus on. But I think it's possible to do that. You know, you mentioned something about like races and how, you know, racing frequently can kind of serve as a quality training session. And that's true, right? It can help us improve our endurance physically, which will provide us some benefits. But also what it does for us mentally is it gives us these experiences which help us develop like our mental tenacity and grit, which really are essential for running fast and reaching our potential and learning how to really push ourselves, right? And so thinking back to like coaching college kids or high school kids, you know, over the course of a season, they may have 6 to 8 races, right? And the goal isn't to always run faster at each race. That's just not typically how a season is constructed, because sometimes they're going to have bad weather to run in, or they're going to have tougher courses, or better competition, less competition, that sort of thing. And so the focus is really just working on different, you know, different parts that go into running fast. So it might be like a strong start, strong finish, really solid middle miles, running even. It might be running as a pack. And so there's different purposes throughout the season. But think about it as an adult runner too. If you're going to do, let's say you're going to do like 4 or 5 Ks over the course of the summer, right? You want to try to periodize your training so that you're going to be running the fastest at the end for a variety of reasons. So you might need to be a little selective about the races you're doing. Maybe pick something that is faster or has better competition, more people, if you thrive on that, running with people later on in the season. You know, you don't want to expect to run your fastest 5K on the first one and then, you know, have that be like the best race, and then the other races are, you're slower because they're, you know, they're more hilly and whatnot. And so, yeah, being selective is really key. But as you go and you get these experiences racing, you learn how to fine tune things, right? Like, did I kind of fizzle out? Did I start too fast? How was I feeling mentally? Was I doubting myself halfway through the race? Was I relying too much on my watch or the clock? All these things that you kind of sort of figure out as you go. And it's really powerful to get, you know, racing experience. So like you said, you recover that much faster, right? And then you can get some quality sessions in between those races, and then hopefully go into the next race with some confidence And that's really what it's about when you train for these shorter races, just getting more experiences.
Right. Racing experience is so key. And especially in those shorter distance races, it's nice to have, you know, a couple scheduled. And that's almost like the ideal thing to do. So really good summary there. Question number four, breastfeeding and race day logistics. So just with anything that you would do on race day, you definitely don't want to try anything new. So as you go into your race, you really want to know, like, what is your feeding schedule looking like? What is the longest that you have gone comfortably without pumping, nursing, whatever it may be? And really sticking to that schedule and making sure that we're not missing a pump, because the last thing that you want to do is end up getting some sort of like mastitis or being super uncomfortable while you're running because you're too full. So depending on the length of the race and everything, I think most people can kind of calculate out like how long can they go. I definitely would not stretch it. Always better to err on the side of caution and pump before the race if it's a longer race than to, oh, I'll just pump after, because you really want to be realistic with what it's going to look like after the race as well, because at least in my experience, it feels like you can add at least an hour onto the end of the race before you get into your vehicle or get able to do that, just because there's a lot that kind of goes on at the finish line. Some people are able to get away right away, but I think it's important to be realistic with how long you're going to be out there and kind of calculate that and then go backwards from there. How is this going to work? For some races, you might eat, like if it's a bigger race like Boston, you might email like the race director or the info email and just say, hey, do you guys have like any place for nursing moms to pump or whatever? If that's an option, some big races do have that as an option. A lot of the times they're not going to. So I would maybe like, you could email and say, are there like bathrooms available like in a school? Or am I going to be doing this in a porta potty? Or is this going to be something that's happening in my car? Just kind of be aware of kind of how it's going to go down. Maybe you are going to bring your child with you and do the nursing in the car or whatever it may be. But also know that it's probably not going to be, unfortunately, like ideal situations, right? It might have to be pumping in the car or whatever it may be. And so maybe that means bringing like a small cooler where you can put the breast milk if you want to save it. Which of course most people would want to save it, and just going from there. And then also the most important thing, so obviously you want to be pumping and feeding before you run so that you can empty things out, make sure that you're comfortable when you're running, but you really also want to make sure that you're taking off any sort of tight sports bra after your runner race and pumping right after. I do have a couple of friends who have gotten mastitis after a race specifically because they did not feed or pump within, you know, 1 or 2 hours of finishing the race, and they thought, oh, like no big deal. But it's a very common time that people will get mastitis is if they don't take off the tight clothing and they're really full. So keep that in mind. Try to feed or pump right after the race as well. So question number five, should I use MAF heart rate or lactate threshold heart rate to train in zone two? Jason, what do you have to say for this one?
When it said MAC heart rate, I was thinking, did they mean max heart rate or MAF?
Oh, so maybe
I will tackle both because I was kind of not sure and I'd want to make sure we address this. Mm. So, you know, thinking about this, you know, the old max heart rate was like 220 minus your age, right? And so, a lot of people use that max heart rate number as an estimate, or they'll use it from like a certain event or race result if they, you know, they got a measurement somehow, right? Or they maybe did like a VO2 max test that calculated that. So you could use that as a way to sort of set up your zones, right? Other people, the MAF method, I'm not super familiar with it, but it apparently is kind of a philosophy that says you need to start with like a solid base training where you only focus on slow mileage for the first 2 months, keeping your heart rate really low, which allows you to, you know, train, minimize your risk for injury. And typically what that method is you take 180 minus your age, and then that is your training heart rate for your easy pace. So, you know, if you're 40, your heart rate should be around 140 or under during your easy training runs during this period. So that makes sense to me. And again, these are just philosophies. So whatever you choose, you know, take it with sort of like, just use it as a way to sort of monitor your progress, but it's not the end all be all, right? Like there are times I use a heart rate monitor. Typically it's when I'm doing bike rides because I'm just curious and I'm not as good about dialing into effort zones. I want to make sure I'm not like overtraining. But with running, I've been running for a long enough time now where I feel like I have a pretty good grasp on listening to my body, differentiating between different effort zones. And So for me, I've always kind of trained more off of like pace and effort. But the last part of this was that the threshold, lactate threshold heart rate, right? Because I know we get that reading sometimes too from our Garmin, like you've increased your lactate threshold heart rate, which means you should be able to run at a higher heart rate for longer, right? And have it be your threshold. So, you know, all of these things are great to be aware of, but I think, you know, you don't want to rely solely on one of them. It's important to know sort of what your heart rate is, or what your threshold pace is in comparison to the heart rate, and then just adjust accordingly. Like if it's hot out or you're just feeling tired, I would stay under that reading, you know, or run slower, that sort of thing. But I think you mentioned in the intro again, just like using other methods for monitoring mm-hmm. your training. I think that's really essential, not relying too much on the heart rate. You know, if you have a chest strap, that's a little bit more reliable than your wrist watch, because I know mine has given me a lot of faulty readings over the years. So it's interesting, because I know as runners, especially if you're somewhat newer to the sport and you're looking for ways to get faster, you want to have like these metrics mm-hmm. give you like proof, right? You want the proof to be in the pudding, but that's not always the case, especially when you're dealing with so many other variables that go into your running, like you know, just stress, weather, time of day, all these other factors. So
yeah, I think there it's better just to run based more off of pace and effort than heart rate for a number of reasons. I've personally had the experience of doing workouts in my Garmin. I'm literally at like maximal effort and my heart rate is reading like 150. And that's definitely not a reflection of what the effort I'm putting forth is. And so in those cases, it could probably be really frustrating if I was trying to train off of doing my speed workout at some sort of like max heart rate. I just think that the faulty reading of the wrist monitor in and of itself is a problem. And then there's the other factors that go into it, such as like, are you caffeinated? Are you taking certain medications? There's things that will skew your heart rate in general. And then I think there's also the stress factor, right? We've all heard of like white coat syndrome, where your blood pressure reads high at the doctor's office because you're anxious. Well, if you're anxious and you're doing a workout or a run and you're looking down at your watch and you're stressing about your heart rate, and then you see that the heart rate goes up and you stress some more, I've seen people just kind of drive themselves crazy over it. So I think right. It is good to maybe like use that as a check to see like, okay, like where was my heart rate maybe on this effort? But I don't think you need to be kind of like married to the heart rate piece of things. And so, yeah, I think this was a really good episode. We answered 5 good questions here. And if anyone has any questions for future episodes, we would love to answer them. You can email them to our inbox at info@runforprs.co, or you can reach out on our social media page. We can definitely get you set up, because we will be doing a few more of these Ask the Coaches podcasts this spring and summer. And they are pretty fun to do. So if you are interested in working with a coach on a free 7-day trial, I know we've talked a lot of specifics into like workouts, especially with that first question about how do I achieve my VDOT marathon pace. Definitely one of my favorite things to do as a coach is help people achieve what those are, because it's just super fun. It's like putting a puzzle together, and I'd love to do a deep dive with you, and so would some of our coaches. If that's something you're interested in, you can fill out the form at www.runforprs.com for a free 7-day trial. Again, that's www.runforprs.com. Thanks for tuning in.